This is Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on 760 WJR. Your bird's eye view on Michigan's business and entertainment scene. Here's Jeff.
All right, welcome to Let's Go Michigan. Kristen Kujawa, Mark Pastoria here with me as always, co-hosting the show. Guys, you know, one of the key objectives of our show is not only to highlight news and information, stories, features of interest to those of us living in the great state of Michigan, but also to do a little cheerleading for the Great Lakes State. We like to celebrate Michigan and Michiganders who are really doing things to make our state as great as it is. And a couple of things in the news this past week. One, how about this? Ann Arbor named as a top travel destination in the Midwest. That according to a new list in Forbes Advisor. They recognized Ann Arbor, describing it as one of the nicest places to visit in the Midwest. Apparently that's a subset of the overall list, and that's where Ann Arbor got its recognition. Comments by Forbes Advisor staff member Carolyn Lupini had this to say. She says it's a combination of college charm and its artsy community. Of course, we've got the Ann Arbor Art Fair going on there, the relationship with the University of Michigan. But beyond its cultural and educational landmarks, she says Ann Arbor is also a haven for foodies. City's culinary scene is a delightful surprise, as she puts it, featuring an array of dining options that range from gourmet to quirky food trucks, etc. And of course, no discussion about Ann Arbor's food scene can be complete without recognizing Zingerman's Deli. Ann Arbor.
That's great.
You know, Ann Arbor's getting a lot of recognition these days. Well, look, I love the way it was described by the Forbes team as being a combination of college charm and being an artsy community. It really is that.
I think that's a really good way to sum it up.
It's a great place to visit. And how lucky are we that when you talk about places to visit in the Midwest, it's just a quick drive.
Down the street.
Down the street. And how about this, speaking of recognition, in USA Today's list of the best restaurants in the country, we've got a local one that made the list, a Detroit restaurant. Actually, the only Michigan restaurant to make the list, Selden Standard.
I love that place.
Isn't that a great place?
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's a good choice.
Yeah. And that's where?
Located downtown. It's on 2nd Avenue in Midtown. It opened in 2014, and it is cool. I mean, it is. It's one of those places that's different, distinct. It kind of leads the cultural revolution, at least from a foodie standpoint, in downtown Detroit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great standout.
And Midtown's so great.
Oh.
It is. Oh, God, they have so many restaurants. It's young. It's vibrant. You can walk from place to place. Midtown's fantastic. Highly recommend.
Absolutely. So if you didn't have reason before, you do have reason now to go to the Selden Standards. Congratulations to them. Now, in being fair, while we love recognizing Michigan for all that makes it great, we also got to call ourselves out every now and then. Uh-huh. I mean, let's be real, right? So to just make it seem like this isn't just a schmooze fest here, you know, we're just not handing out accolades and loving ourselves and loving the state of Michigan too much, we do got to call us out on this. Detroit now recognized as having drivers that are, well, just terrible.
What?
Detroit, yes, of course, we're known for automotive legacy, but the reality is a new study by Forbes Advisor ranks Detroit's drivers as third worst in the nation.
What makes them the third worst?
Okay,
what do we do?
Right. So here's what they had to say. Out of 50 most populated cities in the nation, Detroit ranks second in the rate of fatal car crashes with 19.76, to be exact, per 100,000 residents, or call it 20 crashes per every 100,000 residents. Only Memphis, Tennessee had more. The city with the worst drivers in the U.S., Albuquerque, New Mexico, then followed by Memphis, Tennessee in second. Of course, Detroit, third. Tucson, Arizona ranked fourth. And Kansas City, Missouri ranked fifth.
Can we go back to talking about good things?
We will indeed.
Okay,
we're going to get right back to it. But, you know, like I said, got to be fair here. Let's look on the bright side. It's an area we must focus on and improve upon.
Okay.
So it's an opportunity.
Okay,
Even better. There's the silver lining. That's absolutely right. Now, one of the things it does mean is that, of course, we have higher auto insurance rates here. We all know too well about that. If we can't be motivated by anything else, by having more of us not be part of a statistic here when it comes to driving in the state of Michigan, we'd rather have a little more money in our pockets. That's for sure. So in order to do that, look, everyone, just slow down a bit. Be a little more aware, cautious. Do not text while driving. All those kinds of things. Here, back to Kristen's point, good things happening in the state of Michigan. 19 historic Michigan properties have been given special recognition in 2023. that through their listing now with the National Register for Historic Places. This is the federal government's official list of districts, sites, buildings, structures, and objects that are worthy of preservation for their historical significance, according to the National Park Service. There's more than 96,000 properties across the entire U.S. that are part of the register, and that includes nearly 2,000 in total in the state of Michigan, but 19 more have now been added. Let's call out just a few. Herman and Hattie Besser House in Alpena, Michigan. Eden Springs Park in Benton Harbor. Samuel D. Holcomb School in Detroit. Pittsburgh Plate Glass Company, Detroit Warehouse in Detroit. First Congregational Church in Wyandotte, Michigan, just to call out a few. So there we have it, another positive for the state of Michigan. Now, just in closing on our first segment here, there were some new words added to the dictionary.com dictionary. We featured some of these words occasionally on our show. We have some fun with this. Of course, these words make their way into the dictionary because they've surfaced as really being part of our daily lives now. You know, people are using them at a point where these words are worthy, if you will, of being listed formally in the dictionary. Let's pick out a few of them. Let me run a couple of these by you. See if you guys are on top of it or not, on the leading edge of what's cool and culturally happening and everything else. Let's start with it just to warm you guys up a bit. Start with a couple of easy ones. Greedflation. Have you heard the term? Essentially, that is inflation driven really by greed. Okay. So greedflation, for example, this can play out in the form of increasing prices of things that you sell just because you're greedy, not because costs have gone up, thereby driving up the cost of what it is that you sell, but in a time of inflation, just doing it because you can, therefore being greedy, that known as greedflation. Now, I got you warmed up. Okay. Now, here's a couple for you. Kristen,
yeah.
Have you ever heard the term bed rotting?
Uh-oh.
Bed rotting? No.
Bed rotting.
Can't yes. say I can even use it in a sentence.
Okay, well, maybe your kids have heard this one.
Right.
Actually, this is a term used by a lot of kids. I would imagine what I picture is maybe high schoolers, mm-hmm. those on college campuses in between their classes.
Okay.
This is when you're spending way too much time just lounging in your bed, rotting away, as opposed to being productive. So the term for kind of meaninglessly...
Like a couch potato?
I guess it's probably... Like that's a good yes.
But you don't even make it to the couch.
No, no need to make it to the couch when you're bed rotting.
Okay, I like that one.
Exactly. Here's one for you, Kristen. How about barbecue?
Oh, yeah.
You've heard that?
I have heard that.
Do you know how it's used?
I don't know how it's used. Just tell me.
I don't know.
Oh. Doesn't have to do with fashion, like Barbie style.
Right. So here it is. Barbiecore, an aesthetic or style featuring playful pink outfits, accessories, decor, celebrating and modeled on the wardrobe of the Barbie doll.
Mm-hmm. That actually made it into the dictionary.
It did.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah.
They're bored.
How about this one, guys? And because it's made it into the dictionary, I can say this, by the way, without raising any red flags or getting a call from Ann Thomas at WJR. How about this one? Enshittification.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
that is a word. Enshittification. This is essentially where an online platform, for example, comes out and proposes to offer its users certain benefits and so on, but then later on raises prices in order to generate more profits, that at the expense of its users. That is enshittification.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That
perfect
is,
word.
That is a perfect word.
I feel like it's a little bit of a made-up word, but I can absolutely see using it in lots of different ways.
I was just going to say, you're going to use it.
I'm going to.
You are going to use it. I knew you would.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, we're in trouble.
Just wait.
Yes. How about the ick? I-C-K?
Ick.
Oh, the ick.
Yes. Yeah. The ick.
When tell us, but I feel like I've heard this.
So that's when you feel suddenly a disgust or dislike, often in response to the actions of another person. That's
I may also start to use that more readily.
See? Yeah.
Mark,
next
we better stop
me.
While
She's
we're ahead.
Use it all day long.
She is next to you. I'm sorry to do this to you, Mark.
To happen.
Yes, you're going to be having a lot of enshittification and ick going on from here forward. Lastly, I'm going to call out one more.
Here
I love this
go.
One. And I've heard this one. No, this is a good one. Bussin'.
It's bussin'.
Bussin'. Yes, I have heard my kids, mm-hmm. my sons in particular, who are of the age, Gen Z, use this term bussin'. And essentially, this term originates in African-American culture, which refers to doing well or enjoying something. That's bussin'. Kind of like it's cool or that I'm enjoying it or whatever it may be. It's bussin'. So there we go. I could go on and on, but I think we better stop while we're ahead.
Yeah.
There you have it. new words in the dictionary. Detroiters, Michiganders everywhere will be walking around being much cooler using these terms and others. Check them out on dictionary.com.
In shitification.
Mark, you're going to be talking about that for the next few days. I know. All right, there you have it. Our first segment coming to a close. Before we send to a break, though, however, Kristen, tell us what we've got coming up on the show ahead.
Later in the show, we're going to talk to Kelly Kordaki. She's from Business Insider, and we're going to talk to her about LinkedIn potentially being a new dating site.
What?
Ick. I know.
Ick is right. That's exactly right, Mark. Ick.
That's right.
Okay.
And then we are continuing to celebrate our wonderful state of Michigan. We're going to talk to Paula Gardner. She's from Bridge, Michigan, and we are highlighting elderly instruments here in Lansing.
Okay. Looking forward to that and more. A great show ahead. Listen, Kristen, Mark, I don't know about you guys, but when I think of LinkedIn, I certainly think of it as a business-oriented platform, a platform where people either look for jobs, those who own businesses look for potential candidates for jobs, business owners looking for ways to collaborate, et cetera, et cetera. LinkedIn, a professional platform, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Not so fast.
What?
It's forbidden to do anything personal on that platform, right? I mean, not forbidden by LinkedIn, but it would not be appropriate.
Right. It's not part of the culture.
Well, look, now what's happening on LinkedIn is something that on the surface of it seems like it's counter to what LinkedIn's all about. But the reality is it kind of, as you think about it, it makes a little bit of sense maybe for some.
Okay.
And that is this. LinkedIn is now being used by many as a dating platform.
You know what?
A dating
there's
platform.
There's nothing no, no, safe let's, left no, in the world.
There's nothing sacred left in the world. But let's think about this for a second.
Okay.
So what's happening is that for those people out there looking for love, you know, there are various ways you can do it. You can go onto the common platforms available to us all. I don't even need to name them. People are very successful.
Absolutely.
But on LinkedIn, on the surface of it, it's a professional-oriented platform. Many of us think of it that way. And it starts and stops there. But if you look beneath the veneer of what LinkedIn's all about, think about this. People display their professional resumes. They indicate the company they work for. They post content of relevancy and of interest to them. They're presented in ways that are not overtly intended to impress. But there is stuff about, this guy's director of marketing at a Fortune 500 company. I kind of get an idea of what that may pay, for example.
Right. Or this woman just made partner.
Yeah. There you go. So you do learn a little bit about the professional life. And even aside from the excitement that can come with hitting a real breadwinner, say, for example, is the idea that, look, there's no getting around it. And so that, it kind of gets covered pretty well on LinkedIn.
That's
and it
true.
Gets covered in a way where those facts can be checked.
I was just going to say, there's really no lying because
no.
you're being more honest on LinkedIn than people have been on those other dating apps or dating sites, right? Because you're putting yourself out there on LinkedIn for potentially a future job or networking purposes. So you are being more honest and more open.
All right. So we want to take a deeper look at what's going on LinkedIn with respect to using it as a platform to find a romance, love, a future spouse, whatever it may be. And bringing us the story, Kelly Maria Kordaki has got the story. She's just published an article in businessinsider.com. LinkedIn isn't just for jobs anymore. It's now a dating app too. Unbelievable, but true. Kelly, welcome to Let's Go Michigan. Give us an idea of what's going on now when it comes to LinkedIn being positioned by some as a dating app.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me
here
today, Jeff. So yeah, it's really interesting. There has been kind of over the past couple years, a real rise in, first of all, in you know, LinkedIn use among younger people, members of Gen Z, you know, graduating from school, entering the workforce, and posting about how much they love LinkedIn on TikTok. And inevitably, what has also happened is that these younger members of the workforce have also been posting about dating on LinkedIn, using LinkedIn to find a romantic match, or treating LinkedIn like a dating app. And in fact, some people have even gone so far as to say that LinkedIn is the best dating app and better as a dating app than for any other purpose.
Well, I think this is really interesting. And frankly, you know what? On the surface of it, you hear that and you say, what? Are you kidding me? LinkedIn is a place for people to do business or find a job, as I said, not to find a romantic interest. But then when you start to think about it, first of all, it's more subtle. I mean, people can meet each other without the pressure of having to be in a setting where this is all about romance and dating and everything else. This can just kind of happen more organically. But most of all, and I think you mentioned in your article, someone referenced this and said, while she's not looking for a sugar daddy, it makes a lot of sense, LinkedIn does, as a platform to find romance because you can learn about a prospect's employment history, education, career aspirations, etc. And I read that and that makes all the sense in the world.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah,
totally. In some respects, it could be said to make sense. But when you dig in a little closer and you look at user attitudes, you realize that it's a little bit more complicated.
LinkedIn does also have its advantage that on Facebook, Instagram, we're always posting our fake life, our happier than everything.
Right, that's
Look
a
at
good
me,
point.
I'm doing this, I'm here, I'm there. Where on LinkedIn, I think people are more authentic because you're really trying to get a job or promote your business or whatever. So you're being more authentic than you would on Facebook or Instagram or any of the dating sites.
Totally. And actually, that was definitely a common thread in the conversations that I had with young people who had either received unwanted messages on LinkedIn or had invited the idea of meeting somebody on LinkedIn. In both cases, they pointed to the reality that, you know, a person can't really invent their history and they can't really make stuff up, or at least they can't as easily on LinkedIn. You know, you're linking to real companies, real professional references. It's a little bit more legit and it's kind of a more reliable way to authenticate somebody's identity and to see what they're all about.
Is LinkedIn putting any gates up? I mean, they have to know about this. Are they targeting individuals or, you know, they spam companies that are going on and treating it as a dating site?
So to be very, very clear, LinkedIn is super against this practice. All of the experts that I spoke with are also like, do not do this. Do not use LinkedIn as a dating site. Bad idea. You could completely blow up your professional reputation. You could alienate people on the platform, make people uncomfortable.
Sure.
Because, you know, with a dating site, for example, there is implied consent. People are on a platform with the express purpose of finding romance. And so everybody has buy-in. Everybody knows what the drill is. People aren't using LinkedIn for that reason. Like, some people maybe are trying to, but at the end of the day, that's not what it's for. And so, sure, on the one hand, some people may decide to try their luck, but it comes with a lot of downsides and a lot of risks. And so my article is really about this tug of war between, like, on the one hand, people are going to try their luck wherever they can. Any platform that has a direct messaging function since 1995, when classmates.com became the first social media site to hit the web, people have always been sliding into the DMs, trying to find love, and, you know, mixed results. And I think with LinkedIn especially, the results are you really could completely destroy your career.
You could, and I think it depends on how you navigate the situation and the decorum by which you present yourself and your messaging and everything else. It can be the kind of thing that maybe if it just kind of happens subtly and it's not in your face and you really understand that many people are not going to take to it or be open to, you know, any kind of personal overture. But yet, who knows? There may be some people out there that will have no problem with it at all. And dating is hard. Finding someone is hard. This could be another way to make it happen. Really interesting, both from a business and personal perspective. Listen, Kelly, we appreciate you sharing the story with us.
Just be respectful.
Be respectful.
That's
absolutely
right.
Again, Kelly, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right. So, interesting story. You know, again, it does make a lot of sense, doesn't it?
It does.
It does make sense to look for love on LinkedIn.
This seems like trouble. Seems like trouble. That's all I'm going to say. It just seems like trouble.
I'll respond to that. I think you have to be very careful about the way you approach reaching out to people on LinkedIn. And I can see things going wrong there.
Absolutely. I'll be anxious to hear if LinkedIn does anything about this. But if they start to put blockers or filters in, like a lot of these social apps now have parameters of things that you can post, not post, say, not say, take down, whatever. So I'll be interested to follow LinkedIn to see if they do anything about it.
All right. Now onto a great story, a real gem. Right here in the state of Michigan, on the one hand, it's a gem because it's a successful business now, recognized as being one of the leading small businesses in the U.S. by the SBA. We'll get to that in a second. But also because it offers those of us in the community And people come from far and wide beyond the state of Michigan, but certainly in Southeast Michigan, Michigan at large, to go shop at this store. This is Elderly Instruments, based in Lansing. Great store, been around now over 50 years. And as I say, just recognized with a major award. Covering the story, Paula Gardner, business reporter and associate editor for Bridge, Michigan. Kristen, I know you're excited about featuring this story.
I like a good small business story. I like when we can promote Main Street America.
We're going to get to Paula, but I know you always dream of being a tambourine girl in
a
band.
You think I can buy a tambourine here?
You can not only buy the great tambourine, yeah. You'll know why it was the best tambourine for you to buy. It'll even maybe show you how to play it. Not that you need any guidance on that. It comes naturally to you.
Maybe. I have to go seek out Lillian.
Lillian is exactly the proprietor of Elderly Instruments right now. Paula, welcome. I have to ask you first, what was it about this story at this time that prompted you to want to write about Elderly Instruments?
I wrote about it because somebody reached out to us and told us that Elderly was named the National Small Business of the Year, which I thought was extraordinary, and I also hadn't seen it at that point. And I knew about Elderly. I am not a musician, but I did have family members who used to go there fairly regularly and would talk about it, and it just seemed like it was one of those special types of retail destinations that makes a difference in Michigan. And that is a story that I wanted to tell. And I felt like everything was kind of coming together at that moment to warrant some time investment just to tell the Elderly story.
It is a great one. The cool thing about this business is people can relate to it. This is musical instruments. You know, it's making music. Not only can they relate to it, but it's cool. You know, making music is a magical thing for sure. And it's so empowering for young people, you know, to be able to go get that first instrument, or for someone to go get their 20th instrument, whatever it may be. It's just a feel-good, great story. The family's amazing. The business has been around a long time. I have to share with you and our audience, I was one of those people that got my first instrument, a Martin guitar, six-string guitar, at Elderly Instruments probably in the 80s. So I know the business well, love it, have always appreciated it. Did you get a chance to go into the Elderly store doing the story?
Yes, I visited it and got a tour. And I have to say that I can't say enough that I'm not a musician, but I didn't need to be one, I feel, to feel the magic as you step in.
Right.
Because there's so much there. And I couldn't even convey in words kind of that unique soundtrack that happens when you're in the store, because people are constantly talking about music and instruments in such a collegial way, but they're also trying them out. So you might hear something come from one room and, you know, here comes a banjo, you know, a little riff coming from a different room. And you just know that people are willing to try the instruments, and Elderly encourages that. So they're picking them up and they're playing them and they're hearing them. And it just creates this sense of creativity, but also a welcoming creativity.
It's really true. I don't know about you guys, but I love going to like an independent bookstore, you know, as an experience. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the same kind of thing. You know, there's a smell and a feel and a history and a magic. You're learning things between the book covers. And here you're picking up an instrument and making music. And as I say, so empowering. It's really cool. What did you learn about why Elderly was selected as the winner of the SBA program?
A lot of it was its longevity, but also what it brings to trying to, I guess, adapt and improve operations, but keep its essence. And all of that kind of played out and played into the winning for the SBA. And Lillian Werben, who is now CEO, taking over from her father a few years ago, she told me that before she learned that she won, she had a chance to interact with all of the finalists. And they all kind of shared best practices and their challenges. And she felt like winning was kind of off her radar. It was the chance to talk to all of those small business owners and just feel their experiences and have this sense of being a part of that club and learning from them. And then when she won, she felt somewhat overwhelmed, happy. And then she kind of retreated to a corner of the room and just kind of absorbed the feelings and the sense of what she'd already learned and accomplished by being there.
What a cool thing. And I know some of the values behind the stories you highlight in your article: enthusiasm, resilience, community focus, and a commitment to keeping musicians happy. You know, I can hearken back to that experience I had in buying my guitar. I walked into that store really looking for a guitar, but having no clue. I was a beginner. I had no clue about what guitar to buy, what were the differences, what were the key things to look for. And I know this was back in the 80s, so it was a while ago, but these kinds of values have been maintained throughout the years, and it's part of what makes it not only a great business, but a great institution, if you will. because they're so focused on keeping musicians happy, getting them started right, getting them educated, knowing that they walk out of there feeling like they really bought a great instrument, whatever it may be.
Well, Jeff, aren't those attributes exactly what we would wish for all small businesses? I mean, we would want a small business to maintain that sense of enthusiasm, the resilience, the community focus, their commitment to all of their customers. We are definitely champions for small businesses in Main Street America. That's what we would wish. And those are exactly the words she used on her application.
Yes. One of the fascinating things to me about elderly is, you know, when we think about small businesses and hiring, we know many of them have had difficulty hiring over the years. Imagine being elderly instruments and having an opening on your staff for a luthier, you know, or for somebody who needs to be a super specialized musician who's capable of repairing an instrument or appraising an instrument, because they have amazing inventory of new and used instruments, and they help musicians appraise them too and set values. You know, it's a business of specialists too.
Yeah, it's such a niche market.
Such a niche. And, you know, the folks who work there take so much pride in that, but they're rare on their own.
Well, and then the fact that they've gotten the right people is a feather in their cap for sure. And again, extends to their whole notion of why they stand out. The professionals that they've been able to amass as part of their team and retain has really been incredible. I'm curious, in operating this business, since they've done it so well, they've been now recognized by the SBA, but even prior to that, so many great, loyal customers for years and years, decades. What is their vision for the future? Is it business as usual? Is there anything new or different we can expect? Or what's kind of the vision going forward for the company?
I think the store itself, from what I was able to glean, will probably stay roughly the same. You know, they have some unused space in a lower level, and I mentioned that, where they used to do one-on-one lessons kind of in cubicles, and that doesn't work anymore. So they're trying to figure out what would work in this space, because they do use their entire building. But Lillian's really interested in expanding the audience for roots music. She's trying to broaden the audience, and she's trying to make it feel more inclusive to more people. She's holding events. She's on boards. She's looking at ways to be more than a store, but like a conduit between people and music and musicians, and just raising the profile that way of the types of music that their customers play. And I think that's an amazing goal. You know, I think we all came out of the pandemic wanting to have more experiences, and like her vision for how a bricks and mortar store can play a role in that is very interesting, and it probably served them well.
I agree. You know, one of the things that's always a tension in a business like this, elderly met with success relatively early on. There's always a temptation to say, for example, want to expand by going nationally, opening up other locations, you know, franchising, whatever it may be. And that's worked out for many. That's a good strategy, proven. But at the same time, when you have that as a goal, the real core essence of what made you great can be lost. And so by them maintaining this location as the primary focus, I think they're able to stick to that essence and maintain it and keep the character of the business and the customer experience in place much better. And I think that's part of why they're so successful and so loved.
Yeah, I agree. I think also, you know, one of the reasons small businesses try to expand is to just have more money coming in and, you know, be more efficient with their platforms. She is using like a little bit of AI on the website, not a lot, but like just enough to keep the hands-on work of it a little bit less labor intensive, and just driving efficiencies where she can without losing that essence of who they are.
Exactly. Well said. Paula Gardner, business reporter and associate editor, Bridge, Michigan. This is a feel-good story. Thanks for bringing it to us, Paula.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We're so proud to have elderly music right here in Michigan. Well, as I said when we teed this up, Kristen, a feel-good story for sure. You went to Michigan State University. You spent time in.
I did.
In these, did you ever go over to elderly?
Can't say that I did. I missed out. I wish I would have. I didn't know. I mean, I'm not very musical.
Well, you do now.
Except for my tambourine
love. We're glad she didn't go, because she would have joined a band and she'd be gone.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's true, Mark. She would have run away, like running away with the circus. But now you know how to fulfill your tambourine dreams, though.
Yeah. And did you actually buy a guitar there from them?
Truth be told,
yeah,
I bought my first guitar there, a Martin six-string guitar. I think it was called a D18, something to that effect. I still have it to this day. But I actually went back and bought a second and a third guitar from them. And I think when I look back on it, there's really no reason for me to buy a second or a third guitar. I just loved the experience mm-hmm. of going to Elderly, being amongst those people, being in the mix of those great instruments.
You probably met Stan and Lillian.
I may have.
Oh my gosh. I feel like we need to go tune your guitars. We need a road trip.
I think a road trip is definitely in order. Elderly Instrument is a fun trip to make for any of you out there listening, thinking about maybe a new hobby, maybe a new instrument, whatever it may be. All right. Well, great story. I don't know about you guys, but this time of year, it seems like what we're feeling in February typically happens in March, that driven largely by the weather. How this is relevant to our next story. Obviously, it's not great weather to go outside, certainly not warm enough to be outside and doing a lot of stuff. And from a winter recreational standpoint, we don't have the snow. So you can find yourself kind of caught between in a kind of a mode where you're kind of looking for something to do. I mean, the football season's over, Mark. You don't have those games going on. Of course, you have other things that you can enjoy. So here's an article that caught my eye. It was an article in Time Magazine, and it was all about why you should have a hobby.
Okay.
And if you don't have one, how to find one. And I thought that was kind of interesting to discuss. I found it enlightening. I mean, I've got the kind of mind where I've always got something going on, that's for sure. There's not a lot of downtime, but I do personally enjoy things that might qualify as a hobby. I get the importance of having a hobby. And so I just was curious if you guys, Mark, Kristen, do you guys focus on a hobby at all?
Not enough.
Not enough.
Need some hobbies here.
You need some hobbies. But certainly, Mark, you love music. You create music. One of the reasons you may or may not need a hobby like others may need a hobby is that your passion and your hobby is creating music, I assume.
Right.
And you do that as part of your work. And it does spill over into your otherwise leisure time, I'm sure, at times as well. But Mark, you said you need a hobby. Why do you think you need a hobby? Is it that you're looking for something else to do with your time? Or is it that you need to be spending your time in other ways, you feel?
Well, first, I need to find more time.
Okay, right. We know
and
that.
I need something outside of work. Music sometimes becomes work to me.
Exactly. It's a little bit of a blend of both.
So maybe some golfing.
There you go. All right, well, we're going to get to some tips in the Time Magazine article about how to find a hobby, Mark. And we're going to help you do that in just a minute. Before we do that, though, Kristen, I want to go to you. What about you? Do you have a hobby?
I don't. I'd say my kids are my hobby. That's not really a hobby, though.
That's also my job. Yeah. I was just going to say, depending on how you look at it.
And my profession and livelihood. It's my passion.
I do get that. Yeah. I do, because I'm a parent of young kids. I think we all get that. But even being a parent and considering that your hobby, the article goes on to make the case, it's really good to get your mind off of stuff like that.
Absolutely. If I had to like really pinpoint one, I would say gardening.
And I do hear you talk about in the warmer months, the fact that you're outside working in the garden.
Yeah.
You do enjoy, see, there you go.
Yeah.
And it does ease stress and it does get your mm-hmm. mind off of other things. It gets you away from
it's
everything
creative,
else.
It's physical.
And you feel like you're accomplishing something. That's exactly right. I would say that one of my hobbies is very similar to that. And then I like to go, we got this little property out in the country. I like to go just be on the property and do work around the property. Same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There is gardening involved in that and other things. And I do get that. I enjoy that very much. It's good to get your mind off and feel like you're a million miles away from everything else, even parenting or your work, whatever it may be. Well, here are some tips for those searching for a hobby. Kate Hanselman is someone that the Time Magazine references. She's a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner with a counseling practice known as ThriveWorks. And among other things, she focuses on the importance of having a hobby. She makes clear that research suggests that hobbies lead to better physical health, more sleep, lower stress, greater life satisfaction, a larger social network, and even improved work performance because you help clear your mind and you're able to be more productive at work. She says, hobbies live in the pleasure world, not necessarily in the mastery world. And what she means by that is she said, in a mastery world, you have to achieve certain levels of expectations. There's a kind of a goal to get somewhere with it. With a hobby, it's not that way. It's really just to enjoy it. We're not here to impress, she says. We're not working for a paycheck. There's no ulterior motive. She says, hobbies are just like dessert. And being a baker herself, dessert's the most important part. Okay, so how do you find a hobby if you're out there buying into this? So here's her list of things you need to do. First, ask yourself how you want to feel by engaging in your hobby. She says hobbies present an opportunity to feel like you're on an escape. They can help us get out of our head and calm down and so on and so on. So she said, before you choose a hobby, choose how you want to feel. There are hobbies, for example, that are competitive. If you play golf, you could play golf for pure pleasure. Or you could play golf because you want to really get good at it and then be able to go out with your buddies and beat them. Those are two different kinds of objectives. Next, start small. Don't invest a ton of time right away or you could burn yourself out. Don't invest a lot of money right away. Ease into it. Get some benefit out of it. Find out if that really is the hobby you want to pursue. Make sure it's the hobby for you. And if so, then you can invest more time and even money. Third, be open. Keep an open mind and not dismissing potential hobby opportunities. Next, take a trip back in time. What she means by that is go back to your childhood. Many hobbies that are enjoyable now are things that as a kid you enjoyed doing. So go back in time, try to remember what it was that gave you pleasure as a kid and put those things to work now. She said another possibility is to go back to school. You can actually learn something new. And by that, it could be an online class. It could be, you know, a local community center kind of activity, what it may be. But pursue something that you can become educated about. For example, family history. Take a genealogy class. And lastly, remove the guilt from the equation. Many people don't pursue a hobby because there's dirty dishes in the sink that need to be done, or there's bills that need to be paid, or extra hours you could be working or need to be working, whatever it may be. And so when you take the time for yourself personally, many people feel guilty about doing that. Don't do that, she said. Actually, you'll be a better parent, better at work if you do the hobby. And so think of it that way and don't encumber yourself or prevent yourself from enjoying a potential hobby as part of your life. So those are some tips. Time Magazine. Get a hobby. Could be good for your mental and physical well-being. What do you guys think about that?
I like that. I'm going to post that on our social media pages and find out what our listeners are doing for their hobbies right now.
There you go. Share some ideas.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. So there you have it. So look, whatever it is, find a little something to do on the side and you'll be better off for it. Okay. Great show, guys. We'll be back next weekend again right here on WJR's Let's Go, Michigan.